All right, how's everybody doing? It is Monday here in the beautiful city of Chicago. Hopefully everyone is doing well. We are moving into phase four on Friday. Phase four, I actually just read all about phase four, and it has a contingency plan also for venues and clubs. So that is good news. We might actually have some live music with some heavy duty restrictions here in Chicago, but it'll be good to have everyone back doing a live performance and seeing them rather than streaming and seeing them. Although the seeing and streaming thing has been very good lately, which is exciting. So I'm happy that we're moving into phase four, and looking forward to seeing everyone out at the clubs in Chicago and everywhere else. Everyone is watching us, because I think there's some states that are open right around us, Indiana and Wisconsin, but they're not fully open with live music yet. So this should be a big weekend or two coming up. And of course, everybody wear your masks, stay safe, stay away from each other while enjoying live music. Now, today's episode, episode 56 of Chicago Music Reveal. Of course, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. I'm also the Director of Programming and Entertainment at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, soon to be opening in the West Loop here in Chicago in September. So more about that at epiphanyshy.com. Today, it's an exciting show today. Jim Self is on, and I can honestly say he is the first jazz tuba player, as I mentioned to him when we were talking off air here, to be on the show. And his credits are incredible, which we'll talk a little bit about. But he's got a brand new release along with a guitarist, John Cudini, called The Light Fantastic. And Jim, pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for taking a few minutes.
Thank you, Mike. A pleasure to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about this, because this is a duo album. And it's tuba, right? Am I saying it correctly? It's not euphonium. It's a tuba and guitar?
It's a real tuba, yep. I also play another instrument called the fluba, which is some of the songs.
So what's the difference between a tuba and a fluba?
Well, imagine a tuba-sized flugelhorn.
Oh, wow.
It's a great big flugelhorn, basically, pitched in a tuba and played with a tuba mouthpiece and I just imagine I'm Clark Terry when I play it. So.
Well, I've got to ask you, because, I mean, you have credits. You're reading over your bio. I mean, we could go on and on and on about all of the studio credits you have, all of the motion pictures and movies and soundtracks and TV and radio and jingles and everything else and all the recordings you've been on. But you also have this passion for jazz. How did you find the passion for jazz when you're playing? I'm assuming tuba was your main instrument for quite a long time.
Well, I, as a kid, I was a guitar player, although a very bad one. And like a lot of bad guitar players, I became a bass player. And I made a ton of my living for a long time as an electric bass player and a string bass player, and played with some great jazz guys, including John Hendricks for a whole year.
Oh, wow.
And on string bass and tuba, but all here in LA in a show. Mm-hmm. But it's always been a passion of mine, and I just started working at it when I was about 38 or so, and I gave myself 25 years to try to get halfway decent as a jazz improviser. And in the meantime, I've made many albums, so that each one helped me get better, you know.
Well, to me, and listening to some of the YouTube clips and listening to some different things, I know you've done things with larger ensembles in the jazz realm, and you have something coming out in the near future too with David Angel Band, which we were talking about before we came on. But I mean, you know, a duo of guitar and tuba, I mean, there's nowhere to hide with that. And you can't hide anywhere. It's you and the guitar player. But what was happening was you were able to walk bass lines on the tuba, and then you're improvising on the tuba with the guitarist. And I never thought about it that way, but it makes total sense. I mean, back before there was upright bass, they used to use tuba, obviously, for the bass.
Yeah, for Dixieland and stuff like that, you know. And I did a lot of that when I was young, Dixieland in Washington, D.C., when I was in the Army band. Mm-hmm. And it all is the same, bass playing and playing bass lines on tuba. It's just that, you know, applying the technique, you still got to have the groove and all that.
How hard was it to get the groove? You brought up the groove, and since you played upright bass, that had to help your tuba groove, you know, but to play bass lines on the tuba.
Absolutely. And I've spent 50 years playing with some of the greatest musicians in the world, the greatest drummers, the greatest piano players, and meeting John Chiodini, who we met on the David Angel Band, he and I are about the same age, and we became fast friends, and we started playing, and we liked the sound of tuba and guitar together. And about 3 years ago, we made our first album, Floating in Winter, and then this is our second album.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to me to hear the dynamic between the tuba and the guitar. I'm a drummer, right? So I went to North Texas. I played jazz drums, all that stuff. So I've played with a lot of bass players, and I've played a couple of gigs where there's been a tuba player, and not to your extent, obviously, because it was not swinging compared to what I was hearing on your recording. So I mean, there's definitely a way that you have to go about thinking about the tuba in order to walk bass lines, but then also when you're walking bass lines or you're improvising along with a guitarist, I mean, how are you listening? Because it's completely different, I would imagine, if you're playing, you know, in a classical setting, doing some of the soundtracks or things like that that you do. I mean, when you're just playing guitar and tuba, I mean, for you to be able to improvise, but then also play off of what he's improvising when you're walking bass lines.
John is a famous guitar player out here. He's played with so many people, including a world tour with Natalie Cole and Peggy Lee and many other. He's everybody's favorite guitar player because he's a one man band. His rhythm is so wonderful and so perfect wherever he plays, and he just infected me with his groove. And I'm telling you, all I'm trying to do is stay with him, and it's really brought me out of my shell. I can't. It's hard to explain, but it's after 50 years or so of trying, I finally met somebody that was a musical partner all the way.
Well, it's looking over the repertoire that you have on the recording. You know, there's quite a mixture of different tunes.
Oh yeah.
I was actually really excited to hear Moonlight on there because you do not hear a lot of people play Moonlight at all, really. But I love that tune. That's one of my favorites, actually. So how did you go about picking the repertoire?
Well, it's sort of John and I would get together and rehearse often at my house and in Friday mornings, and we just started coming up with stuff, favorite tunes. You know, I've always loved great songs with great chord changes, and the first album we did all that, and then the second album we decided to write more songs, which was a stretch for me too, and. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we come up, and then between the two of us, we just sort of work out little arrangements and sometimes write them down. And so we have some lines to play, and it's just, we just kind of got inside the music, and I think it shows.
Yeah, it does. It was, I heard about five or six tracks, and, each one of them was different. It was interesting, and it all kind of worked together too when you listen to one track to another track to another track. But I always like listening to recordings that each tune, you know, it's not like here's a standard, here's a standard, here's a standard. We're doing it this way, that way. You have a lot of different tunes in here. So to your point, you must have made more of a notion of picking these songs just because you guys kind of dug them. Rather than let's put a theme together and we're going to have a whole swing album of
right. Well, guitar. I'm an eclectic musician. I mean, I like rock and roll and I like everything. And of course, I've been a very, very busy classical player all my life. And so I like good intonation. I like, all the good tone, all those things mean a heck of a lot to me. So I just apply it to this stuff, and hopefully it's effective. And the first album, we just picked mostly cover tunes. I mean, it's just by all kinds of great people, mm-hmm. and from all the way from Chuck Mangione to Molly Gunn to and you wonder about Moonlight. Well, I was John Williams' tuba player for a long, long time, mm-hmm. and I worked on that movie Sabrina that was a theme song for it. So John loves the song. He heard Sting sing it, and then he brings it in to me, and I and found the right key for the tuba, and I ended up playing that one on the fluba, by the way, which is, it's a little hard to tell the difference because when you play into a microphone, it's still like a tuba bell, you know. It's, in a live concert, though, the tuba, the fluba goes out to the audience, whereas the tuba bell goes up to the right, left, rather.
Okay. Is it with the fluba? Because I'm curious too. Because you know, I mean, I'm used to playing with trumpet players and
Right.
you know, trombone players and things like that, where they can blow a lot of licks, they can put a lot of stuff out there. Is the fluba pretty much the same as the tuba as far as air pressure and how you have to push it out, or is it make it easier? Is it more like a trumpet a little bit?
It's a little bit more resistance than a tuba. Tuba's a little freer, not quite as clear a sound maybe, but it's awful close when you hear it in a recording. If you A/B two tracks, you might tell the difference. But it's like I said, if I was playing in a club like we did in New York last year, it would go out to the audience more with the fluba, you know. But or it depends on how you have it amplified, you know, mic. But I just feel something about, I pick up that fluba and all of a sudden I pretend I'm Chuck Mangione or all kinds of guys, and so John and I just picked a bunch of cool tunes and ones with interesting chords and melodies, and we're really turned on by that stuff. And I've had to learn. I used to have trouble improvising the key of E, so I wrote three songs in the key of E.
It's good practice.
It forced me to learn, you know what I mean?
Well, so we should tell everybody to head over to jimself.com. We'll link it up, obviously, to pick up the new recording, The Light Fantastic. Do you guys ever, I know looking at your website and looking at some of the things, I know you do some things with colleges, but do you guys actually, I mean, are you and John actually going to, if you, well, of course, obviously, we're all in quarantine right now with COVID, so we're not going anywhere. But I mean, is this something that you actually get out on the road and do some duo things in clubs?
Well, we play in clubs in LA a couple times, and we played in New York about 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I was there with a symphony doing Carnegie Hall, and so I booked a night at a club there, and that was a real thrill to play in that town, which is the
Oh,
jazz
yeah.
capital of the world, of course. But we don't go out and play too much. We'd like to play more, but we, you know, it's hard to get any money. And it's not cheap to travel somewhere, or you know, with instruments and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, we're available for hire. We do hope to play a release party for this new album when we can get going here in the fall. And we would, I'd love to play more around town, but it's a matter of getting the places to do it. You know, it's a super hassle to book things.
Oh, yeah. Well, and LA's so spread out too, in some of the different
Oh,
places out there compared to even New York or Chicago, that you know it's a whole different
yeah,
ball game out there to be able to do club
exactly.
stuff.
Yeah, the clubs don't have the nice rooms, which to me means the place that the audience is listening and not drinking and hanging in noisy joints. I can't do that. I
No,
hate it.
well, you don't
I
have
can't.
to.
Well, my instrument just won't cut through all that crap, and so I won't do it. Just put it that way.
Well, it wouldn't allow you to present the music the way you want to present it. So it is a
Exactly.
listening situation for sure,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk a little bit about the classical side of your playing now, because when I talk to people who are classical musicians, very accomplished classical musicians, but then they also play jazz. How big of a switch is it from, I mean, you're talking about phrasing, you're talking about where you place the notes, about everything. I mean, do you have to switch your brain when you're thinking classical to jazz, or is it natural at this point?
I don't consciously think about it. As I said, I was a bass player for years, and I understood the feel and how to get kind of loose and go with the drummer and that kind of stuff. And I just apply that to the tuba also. And then, of course, I've listened to a lot of sax players and trumpet players and other people, and try to copy their stuff, you know what I mean, and their style and their phrasing. And you know, I it's hard to say. I do think I have a certain talent for it, I guess you could say. But Most of it had to be somewhat developed because, particularly the improvisation part of it.
That's one of the hardest things, isn't it? I mean, because you can talk to both sides of it, but you must know a lot of classical players that are incredibly accomplished, but if you put some chord changes in front of them, they would have no idea what you're talking about and wouldn't be able to play over it because it's just a
It's
different
worse than
thing.
that.
Oh
It's worse than that. Oh yeah.
yeah.
Yes. Many tuba players have never played hardly anything without music in front of them, and they can't even play Happy Birthday without making a mistake. And I don't mean to be critical, but and I so I when I my teaching I push that pretty hard, yeah, because I have been mostly a classical player as for making my money.
I was going to say too, I mean, because you're teaching and all that, but I mean, it's got to be it's incredibly difficult just to get into the classical side of the business and be able to have it be profitable and turn it into a career like yours is just extraordinary. I mean, what do you tell young students? Because there's a lot of students that listen to this, a lot of up and coming musicians that maybe just got out of college and stuff, and they're like, trying to find out how to do this, how to do that, how to get into the classical side of it. But I mean, you should really be able to do everything, right, at this point of
Well,
the.
I think that's where things have gotten to because, and certainly it's been true in my life. I mean, versatility is what makes you an employable musician in a city like LA. Because I'm basically a freelance player, even though I play in some symphonies and opera and stuff like that. I still do a whole bunch of jobs, you know what I mean? And for many years, I'd do a double studio call and somehow squeeze one student in on my way to the symphony rehearsal at night, 50 miles away. You know, it was a life of just, I'm a musicaholic, so what else can I say?
I mean,
And
how do you keep your passion for you've been doing this for so long? I mean, you must be doing a lot of the things that you love, otherwise you wouldn't have be continuing to do it, right? I mean, it's just.
that's precisely true. At my age, I would be retired, or I wouldn't have any chops or anything. It is a passion. There's no doubt about it. And it's also been a dream almost my whole life to get a lot better at this. And I actually made a conscious 25-year effort at one point, and that's a long commitment. And that's about 35 years ago, though. And the way I did it was just produce new albums. I've got many albums of many, both classical and many jazz albums with great players like Pete Chrisleep and Gary Foster and just some wonderful cats, man.
That's the thing, right? It's continuing to create and continuing to work on your craft. And you're never getting stagnant just because you're pushing yourself, right? That's kind of the key.
It is for me, and I think I push my students that way a lot, and I don't let them make the mistakes I made. Like I compose a lot now. It's a big deal in my life. I wasn't able to compose till I was 50 years old. I didn't have the confidence. I didn't think that my ears were good enough. But improvising taught me to have stuff in my head, and I do, and I can sit and compose classical music or jazz or whatever I want to write. It's amazing how it's opened up for me.
That's interesting that you didn't have the confidence, but then you finally found that confidence to be able to do that.
Well,
That's a big block for a lot of musicians.
I knew when I was 20 that the artists in music are only the only the two artists. There's the improvisers and the composers. Everything else is recreating music, and those two are the two sides of the same coin, by the way. And you know, a classical composer thinks stuff up and he writes it down. You know, I mean, that's what I do when I write jazz, you know, or when I write classical music. And I think of music as music, from rock and roll to an opera, from you know, it's all good too, you know. And on a high level, everything, country music is terrific in the hands of some of those Nashville cats, you know, amazing actually. And you know, it's all just, and I'm taking rock and roll guitar lessons right now is because of the I've got time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it you're around so many different studio musicians. Now, how did I mean,
Right.
you ended up what, breaking into the scene? You must have been very young when you broke into the scene out in LA, and it must have been way different than it is now, obviously.
Well, it was a lot busier.
Yeah. Yeah. It was probably similar to like Chicago back in the day when there was like people doing like two or three sessions a day because all the jingle work was here, right?
That's right. Chicago was a jingle town, and this was the television and radio. I mean, television and movies town, basically. And but we did jingles and we did record dates and stuff here too. We still do a little bit of all that. But it's not nearly what it used to be because of all kinds of reasons. You know, they go and get it done cheap all over the world. Synthesizers and everything else has killed this recording business.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, back in the day when you started, I'm sure there was like, they still had the studio orchestras, right? I mean,
No. I came to LA in 74.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, I was only here 2 weeks and I did my first TV show. And then I worked at Universal in the studios like that. Universal used to have 20-some TV shows every week with an orchestra.
Oh, my God.
And I worked on tons of that stuff and played bass, trombone, and tuba. And gradually just – and then that all kind of died in 1980 when we had a strike. And then then the movies got real good for me, particularly with some of the great writers of the time, John Williams and James Newton Howard and – on and on and on. And then I met a lot of jazz cats like Marty Paich and I've always played in rehearsal bands. All my life I played in rehearsal bands at the Union. On bass, I'd be everybody's favorite sub because I could read.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just sort of apply all that to the tuba and because I'm a better tuba player than anything, you know, technically. Mm-hmm. And I'd have a pretty nice sound, I think, and that's what I'm trying to sell, I guess, is my sound. I don't want to play loud. I hate it.
Right.
And it wipes you out, too, when you play a brass instrument.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me because somebody like you, you've got to have an open mind, and I wonder how many, you know, musicians come into the studio scene, especially back then, and they didn't have an open mind. And probably some of the directors, some of the composers that you were dealing with directly probably kind of knew certain guys that they're like, you know, don't even call them for this because they're not going to get it. They're not going to want to get it. They're going to be a curmudgeon when they get here. Forget it. But, you know, call Jim because he's open-minded and he can play all different styles.
That's well,
gotta be a key,
I hope
right?
There's some of that. I know there was a movie called The Jerk. Mm-hmm. Steve Martin.
Yeah, that's right, Steve Martin.
Yeah, a wonderful movie. And it had some jazzy stuff in it. There was another movie called, I can't remember now. But anyway, whenever they needed somebody to play like Dixieland parts, written out stuff. Like I have a solo in Sleepless in Seattle with Mark Shaman. And it's a Dixieland kind of a feel. And I've done tons of that stuff. And so I just know how to make it feel. And I got called for a lot of things that way, you know, and because very few tuba players, and certainly the best tuba players were all strictly classical out here,
right?
You know,
right? Yeah.
And the ones that did play at jazz were pretty bad tuba players. Well, I don't want to say that, not bad, but they weren't as good of classical players, but you have to be. You have to play in tune, and you have to play with a click track, or you have to play with the drummer.
Mm.
You just have to, yeah. or there's the next guys in town. And I know how to play a samba.
Yeah.
I know how to play whatever kind of groove. I know it. It's inherent.
Mm-hmm.
For me, not inherent. It's something learned over many years. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, and that's such a key, you know, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I know there's a lot of people that would be curious about that. But I mean, you're able to cross over all those different styles, and the fact that you're still teaching, the fact that you're still connecting with students, reading over your bio and reading over your website, you also have scholarship funds and things for tubas in certain universities, right? I saw IU is one of them and several other ones. So you're giving back and trying to create these.
We are. My wife, I've had a wonderful career. I've got money in the bank. I hate making family members rich because you have it or something. You know, I want to give it, I want to pay it forward basically. So we've given, quite a bit of money over the last 10 years to us, and I tend to hope to do it the rest of my life. And we do two or three of them every year, and tuba scholarships at universities. And that's, to me, that's, it's a, it also get good tax returns from it. I ain't stupid. But no, it's a real good feeling to do it, you
Yeah.
know.
Well, it's probably needed too, I would imagine, right? Because I mean,
Oh,
there aren't that many
desperately.
tuba scholarships out there, or scholarships in general, let alone tuba scholarships, right?
Almost every one of the schools, including North Texas, by the way, we have one there. They said they just never had anybody give a tuba scholarship. It's hard to believe, isn't it? They've had a great tuba program there for many years.
Well, I read that and I wanted to mention that because I always love talking about that because it's all about paying it forward. It's all also if somebody doesn't, I mean, that you could have some killer players that just can't afford to go where they need to go in order to get the scholar in order to get the teaching behind them because it's so important. I mean, talk a little bit about that too with your teaching, but then you do, I'm sure
Well,
you do a lot of master classes and
you see,
stuff and.
I have a music ed degree from a small college in Pennsylvania, Indiana University, Pennsylvania. And I got out of college in 3.5 years and I had no job. So I luckily I went to a Harmony Band concert in Washington Band, and as there an opening, I said, yeah, this was Vietnam time. So I got in the Army Band in Washington. It's immediately I became a pro, a tuba player, not a teacher, nothing else. I was a tuba player, professional, and I made my living at it. And I went on from there and got a master's and eventually a doctorate and all that stuff, and did recitals, did all this, the line that classical tuba players do. And it's because from that moment on, almost my entire life, I've played with great people, great players on every instrument. And so how could you not, if it rubs off, I mean, I've just been surrounded by, well, more good people than I could ever even think to account.
Yeah. It's so important for students to be able to have those experiences. And so I'm glad you're helping to push that along. And I'm sure, I mean, you could just be in passing, talk to some student, maybe you did a clinic or something and you talk to somebody for 5 minutes and it inspires them to go on and do
Oh
something
yeah,
great. It's so
I
important.
know that. I know that. I've done much of that all over the world, by the way, and I know that. People tell me that, and I've been a recipient of that from other people, famous people, including the great Arnold Jacobs with the Chicago Symphony. And by the way, I played with the Chicago Symphony about 10 years ago for a week.
Oh, no
And
kidding.
yeah, the tuba player there is my dear friend Gene Picorni, and he asked me to come and play a second tuba for a week. It was wonderful.
Oh, wow. Well, you
Well,
got a good connection then to Chicago. That's like the best connection,
that's it.
right?
And tuba players are connected all over the world. We really are. There's most cities, there's only one professional, and we're just connected, and that's very cool. We have a wonderful worldwide association, the International Tuba Euphonium Association, and I'm active in all that stuff.
That's awesome. That's great. I mean, it's a small fraternity, really, when you get into it, but I mean, it's a
Yeah,
tight-knit one. So that, I mean,
compared
that's.
to other instruments for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jim, I really appreciate connecting with you here. I'm glad you're on Chicago Music Revealed. I'm happy that we're going to be able to talk and push out this brand new recording that you did with John Cudini. Am I saying that Italian right?
Cudini is the way he pronounces it.
Okay. John Cudini, the duo, and it's The Light Fantastic, and it's available at jimself.com. And of course, all the bios and the information about Jim is all up on that website. And if we ever get back to doing something live and in person, you'll probably be able to check that out. If you're in LA, maybe you'll get to see him live and in person. And
Sure, that'd
you've
be
got that
great.
new recording, David Angel's Band is coming up, and maybe you and I can jump on another show when that hits
Oh,
live, and I'd love to
I'm
talk
sure
about
we
that.
will. I'm sure we will. And it's going to be a spectacular. It's going to be a triple CD.
Well, I can't wait to hear it because I'm not that familiar with that band, so I cannot wait to hear it. It's all the
Well,
heavy duty guys.
Oh, you'll know the cats. You'll know the cats. I know you will.
Oh, that's incredible. All right, good. Well, you and I.
By the way, I wanted to say one last thing. That is, my stuff is also available all over the internet, and you know, and Amazon and all those places too.
All the Baby. Usual spots.
All the spots you have to these days, even though they never pay anything.
Yeah, the digital world, right? Wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to talking to you again, hopefully in a few months when the next recording comes out. But congratulations on this one. The light, fantastic.
This has been fun.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
Bye.
I'll tell you, folks, that's like one of the top dudes in the world, Jim Self, incredible tuba player. Go look at all of the different credits he has. He actually, and I we got talking about other stuff and I didn't bring it up, but he was actually the mothership in Close Encounters. You can hear Jim Self in that one, which is pretty exciting. I mean, it's incredible. He's done a lot of stuff with John Williams, which I'm sure all of you are used to. He's got things on Jurassic Park, just reading over his bio and everything. So really a fascinating person. I'm so happy we could have him on here and help promote the brand new recording, The Light Fantastic. So just check out jimself.com and get more information. Buy a recording, buy a couple of, he's got a lot of recordings up there. He's got some very interesting classical ones too that everyone should go check out. So again, thanks to Jim, jimself.com. And hopefully we will talk to him in a few months when that other recording comes out by the David Angel Band. Now, coming up tomorrow, our friend Chris Anderson from the Jazz Record Art Collective is going to be on. I am looking forward to talking to him. He is starting a virtual concert series and potentially with I think he can have some people in the room starting soon as well. I'm not sure how he's got that happening yet, but I know he's got a whole virtual concert series happening. And so we're going to have him on. We've got Harvey Tillis on later this week, a whole host of people. So thank you so much for watching, listening to Chicago Music Revealed. As I always say, please leave us a comment. Please share this. Please like this. If you like what you're hearing, every day, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here, Monday through Friday, ChicagoMusicRevealed.com for all the past episodes, issues. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, call the grandkids, Chicago Music Revealed, right here tomorrow, 6 p.m. And until then, everybody stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you then.